Okay, so I'm, as you can see, I added a new title, Monkey Business. I thought that would be a nice addition. So this question about whether there is a connection between deifying animals and animal welfare, it's very hard to answer. My preliminary answer is yes and no, which is complicated, right? So why is it not working? Ah, I see. Okay, I am part of the pillar that is run together by Tristan Brown and myself, and it's called Environment, Biodiversity, and the Sacred, and we have one section that focuses on religion and animal welfare. And believe it or not, this is a topic that has started to gain ground in the last few years. There are already two separate readers about animal and religion and many, many articles on this topic. It's surprising because we tend to think of religion as something that is reserved to humans, right? So humans are those that practice religion, not animals. But there is actually quite some literature on the question of whether animals as well exhibit religious behavior. But this is not the topic today. Today, I would like to talk about two different issues that sort of coalesce. Deification of animals, this phenomenon of turning animals into living gods. This is something that is prevalent in almost every religion that you can imagine. And this is not a topic that has been brought together in conversation with the question of religious institutions and to what extent they contribute to biodiversity. So why am I even bringing these two together? It's because I'm a humanist, I'm a medievalist, I usually work on texts, on manuscripts, and so who writes about animals being sacred or being gods? It's religious thinkers, right? Theologians. Religious commentators, these are the people that tell us the reasons for which animals are actually sacred, right? And that happens throughout the medieval period in Japan, which is my specialty, right? 12th to 16th centuries, you see texts that discuss these issues. And then if you just move very fast forward in the future, you will see that there are religious organizations in Japan that have actually contributed to the preservation of species. So is there a connection, right? So I'll say a few words about animals and religion before I get into this main point. You can see animals, as I said, in many, many different religions, even in the Abrahamic ones. Usually we see animals as symbols of certain qualities or ideas, you know, the serpent, right? Embodying evil or Satan or original sin, right? But in some religions, like Native American religions, right, indigenous religions, there are spirit animals, right? There are people or tribes or groups of people that have a guardian spirit in the form of an animal, right? So we see that too. In the case of Japan, we also have the Buddhist side, right? What we call, we can call Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism as dharmic religions, right? It's sort of easy way to group them together, but Japan can be subsumed under this group because of Buddhism. So in Japan we have Shinto, we have Buddhism, we have also other religions. I don't want to complicate this too much, just not to confuse you, but basically the idea of animals as sacred beings is something that pervades most religions, even those that are a little bit more anthropocentric. So when it comes to Japanese religion, as I said, it's both dharmic and animistic. In Shinto, there is this idea that the entire world, right, is pervaded with souls, right? Souls inhabit all kinds of natural phenomena, including animals, right? So animals are sacred too. So we see a sort of a positive attitude to animals on the side of religion in Japan, but also negative. It's a little bit ambivalent. So animals, if for example, in 10th to 12th century didactic literature, you will see animals as moral guides that reward people or punish them, which is basically the definition of a god in Japan, right? Gods bring blessings if you treat them well, but if you don't, they're going to unleash their terrible force, right? And the qualities that are ascribed to animals are also, I call it semi-divine, because gratitude is not entirely divine, a divine quality, but in terms of Confucianism, ancestral worship, right, gratitude can be seen as a divine quality. But so animals display this sort of quality or behavior. They sacrifice themselves, they grant wishes like gods, and they spirit away people. So they make them disappear and take them to their kingdom of gods or kingdom of sacred supernatural beings. We also have a fluidity between animals and people. We have gods that manifest or emanate in this world in the shape of animals. We call it zoomorphism. And we have sometimes animals that shapeshift into people, anthropomorphism. So all of these sound pretty robust and powerful qualities, right, that are attributed to animals. And interestingly, the most politically significant gods in Japan, except the goddess of the sun, right, Amaterasu, who is the goddess that belongs to the imperial family, right? So these other gods, they're all animals, okay? Hachiman, one of the most ancient gods in Japan that has long institutional, political significance, historically speaking, that's a dove, right? Inari, the most popular god in Japan, right? The fox god, it's a fox, or a vixen, depends on the gender, right? Kasuga is a deer, Kasuga, the god of the Fujiwara, right? Most powerful aristocratic family in Japan. And the list goes on. Sanno, the monkey, which I showed in the beginning. Kumano, the crow. Okay, so there are also pretty nasty views about animals that come from religion. For example, the Buddhist take is that animals live in the lower path of the cycle of birth and rebirth, right? So basically, if you're born as an animal, you're not going to get enlightened, right? You need to be reborn again as a human in order to achieve enlightenment. So traditionally speaking, enlightenment or awakening is something that animals do not share in. They're also talked about or referred to as dumb or entities without a mind, beasts that act on their instincts, right? And if you're a predator, that's actually even worse. Animals that are predators, because they constantly kill other animals, it's very unlikely that they'll ever be reborn as a human being. There are also religious justifications for animal suffering and killing. So I'll skip that. I'll just say that there are also compassionate rituals towards animals, at least well-meaning rituals, because some of them end up actually being either abusive or destructive to the environment. One is the animal release rituals, the Hojoe, or in China it's called Fansheng. It's a famous ritual where animals are released into the sea, right? Animals are basically liberated. It's usually fish, lobsters, and so on. But the problem is that when it happens in, for example, in the UK or in places where all of a sudden you introduce animals that are not native to the region, then they become invasive species, and that obviously has a bad impact on the ecology. You often see when these animals are released that all of a sudden seagulls come and start eating the fish, so it's not very effective for saving animals. Not necessarily, right? Here's the example of how crustaceans that do not belong in that area in London were introduced to the ecological system there and caused problems. So there are justifications that are religious for turning animals into gods. And in Japan especially, I think they are numerous. There are various philosophical ideas, doctrinal ideas that actually construct animals as sacred. So the obvious one is animism. We talked about it, right? Animals are spirits of the gods. They're actually gods because they have a soul, right? But then there is these different levels of inherent Buddhahood, which is something that went quite extreme in Japan. So I don't know if you're familiar with it, the Tathagata Garbha, the idea of the womb of the Buddha that grows within you, right? So you might call it Buddha nature. Later it develops into this idea of Buddha nature. So every human being has the capacity, right, to become a Buddha, and then that develops into original enlightenment, which means every human being is already enlightened. It's not just a potential. And then it's being applied to animals, and then it's being applied to inanimate beings, right? So even rocks, trees. Basically, it's absolute affirmation of reality or of sacrality in reality. And by extension, it means, okay, animals are sacred too, right? Everybody, everyone has this already inherent enlightenment, right? The other thing is the tantric esoteric Buddhist worldview, where the entire cosmos is imagined as the body of this cosmic Buddha Dainichi. That means that every single being, right, is coextensive with the body of the Buddha, which means we're all sacred. That includes animals, right? You can't all of a sudden differentiate. Every single phenomena on this world is part of the body of the Buddha. And so there are different ideas like this that are discussed, and animals are included in the discourse. Of course, there are also political motivations. I'm just mentioning this here. Certain animal gods are connected with powerful clans, and so therefore some gods or some animals are treated better than others. How much do I have? How much time? I mean, okay, so well, I talk too much, but this is our case study, the deers in Nara Park, which is a very interesting phenomenon of deers walking around in Nara City, in Nara Prefecture, in this area, called Deer Park. It was established in the 1880s. But the deer in Nara, who is the god of the Kasuga Shrine, the god of the Fujiwara family, has been there, or has been preserved there, the species itself, for more than 1,000 years. And actually, there's been a lot of scientific research about how the fact that the deer was treated as a living god allowed it to survive. So there's a difference between the species of the deers in this region that is highlighted than those that are on Mount Kasuga. There's been some DNA analysis done, and they found out that the deers in the deer park are actually the most ancient species of deer that you don't see outside of this region. Yeah, so What's interesting about this area, has anyone been there in Nara? You walk around, right, and you see all the deers roaming and interacting with people. So there's a very interesting case of human-animal kinship going on there. There are, of course, financial reasons for that, too. I mean, it promotes tourism. The tourists really like it. But on top of preserving that specific species in this region, the religious institutions actually saved it somewhat from extinction. How do we know this? In certain periods, historically, the number of deers, in certain periods where the religious institutions did not pay attention to the deer or did not actually raise it properly or invested in it anything, the numbers went down significantly. So from 1,500 to 1,000 to 40 deers. So we have a bunch of historical examples where this is very obvious, right? So in World War II, right, the religious institutions were basically mobilized for the war and didn't pay attention. The deers were about 30 to 50, right, numbering. So I ran out of time. I have a lot more to say, but basically, there's a lot of conflicting data about this issue. Some articles tell us, well, the religious institution actually managed to save the deer. Some articles say, well, it's actually hurting. There's a major population crisis going on. So what we want to do is enlist the help of Sergio, who is a biodiversity expert, and go to that area and try to connect the humanistic part, right, the question of deification and treating deers as gods with the scientific data and see if this collaboration between humanities and the science is going to yield something productive that will add to this question. Okay, thank you.